Welcome to the Supercoach Champions podcast with your hosts, Wilfred Z, Joe Fitz, and other Supercoach champions.
You're here with Catfish as always. I'm joined today by what Joe Fitz has recently described as our reigning champion once removed. That is the 2022 overall champion, Matt White.
Matty, thanks for jumping on. Look, I know you've had a couple of weeks off and you haven't had a chance to chat Supercoach, so I guess you're super keen to keep going tonight.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, look, I am going to blame the fact I'm 84K on the fact I haven't been able to chat to yourself and Joe. Although hearing your ranks, I don't know if that's really going to help me. But look, I'm looking forward to tonight chatting some interesting things. We have a lot of rounds that we love in Supercoach, right? Like there's the TLT for round one, we get super excited. And then there's the first bye round, everybody's super busy. But to me, I think this one before round three, before the price rises, is huge. You can make some really bad calls here. I think back to Peter Hicku 2 years ago, he based that beast in the first two rounds and then I don't think he tied his boots up for the rest of the season. So let's see if we can avoid Peter Hicku this year.
I think it's a really good shout. I definitely do agree. Rounds three and four, generally speaking, are massive for a super coach, and it can really, I won't say it makes or breaks your season, but it can really set you up if you're well-placed at the end of round three or round four. And you've made the right moves, picked the right kind of pod options, it can really boost you along, no pun intended. In terms of the rankings, cash generation, all of the above. But look, there is pretty big news that's updated since the last time we spoke. Payne Haas, you know, didn't make it through the captain's run. He's officially ruled out and now he's gone for surgery, basically. So they've confirmed they're going to lock him in for a keyhole surgery. They're speculating 4 to 6 weeks, but as we've seen in the past, Payne Haas is a bit of a superhuman. Recovers faster than most people, and he is an absolute machine when it comes to his rehab. So there is some speculation he may only miss 3 games already. In his career, he's generally, you know, either come back as the soon as possible return date or even 1 week before. So would not be surprising to me. But look, as a Payne Haas owner myself, he's got to go, unfortunately. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think it's too much cash in a already diabolical position. So, yeah, he's got to go. I think from his actual output for the Broncos and both Supercoach, it could be a good thing, right? He's seemingly been fighting niggles for, as long as I can remember, really. So maybe hopefully he comes back, plays a game off the bench, drops some cash and we can bring him in. I don't think that'll happen, but, yeah, it might be good for his output.
Yeah, look, I genuinely can't think of a scenario where he's coming back off the bench because he's paying Haas, but... Yeah, look, it may actually result in him being managed a little bit better. And, you know, to be fair, like this is a far cry from when he first came onto the scene. He was playing 70 to often 80 minutes, just absolute machine. So obviously Supercoach gold when that happens. But for his longevity, you know, we're looking at Jason Taumalolo and, you know, his decline over the last few years. And you kind of think, well, the Cowboys did go hard, pretty hard with him when he was at his peak. It's not normal to run 250 plus meters on average for game after game. And that is what Lolo was doing. So it's no surprise that he is obviously slowing up significantly and just having to monitor a lot of, you know, his training loads and stuff moving forward. But look, you know, a lot of us want to think about who we're going to trade in. So I'm going to jump into our next segment, Crunching the Numbers.
Let me clue you in. We need a numbers guy. Get Wilfred.
I have to say that I think this is my favorite new drop from the lads at Chamberlain and especially Ross, who's done a lot of the editing for me. So yeah, not because I'm a name dropped in that one, but yeah. Look, so thank you to our good friend Carl McGrath, accountant, for sponsoring the segment Crunching the Numbers. Again, if you want to make sure you're not fudging your numbers when it comes to your taxes, make sure you get Carl to help you out. So Matt, last week I was talking about base and base attack numbers, basically just reviewing who so far has really stood out and really showed up in terms of their work rate. Now, you know, for me, I'm always looking at how involved someone is and especially how efficient they are with their, you know, their opportunities with the ball, hence base and base attack is what I focus on. So there were a few names that popped out last week. I mean, Bryce Cartwright was one, Zach Lomax was another, Joey Manu was another. And I guess that's the risk of relying on small sample sizes, right? Because Joey Manu went from hitting 62 in base and base attack to scoring like 22 points this week. You had Bryce Cartwright going from, you know, 100 plus and his base and base attack was in the 70s and then all of a sudden dropping to, I mean, to be fair, you'd spend some time playing at center, but whatever, still dropped to low 40s. So therein lies the risk. But, you know, what do you normally look out for when you're working through your numbers? I mean, you've said in the past that you're more of a eye test guy over a numbers guy, but is there something that you do dive into?
I'd have to say, look, let me preface this, but somewhere in between you and Tim Moody would be how I would describe myself. I don't think Tim looks at any numbers. I think he goes purely by feel, and I know you're huge on the numbers. So look, I'd probably put myself somewhere in the middle there. I do like the base, and I love listening to you talking about that because I hate seeing scores of like 17s and 20s. It does make me ill. But also, yeah, a bit of feel, and do I think their next sort of couple of rounds can be better than their previous, right? That's another thing that I sort of focused on a heap in my one successful year, and I know that's a far cry from what's happening now, but look, that's how I play Supercoach. It's not for everybody, but yeah, it's base, but can we do something better this week than we did last week?
Yeah, look, I think that's a fair take. You know, it can be very easy to just get lost in the numbers only and not think about the context upon which it arrives. You know, for example, if it is a really high scoring game, then yeah, you're probably going to have less base numbers because then when you're spending a couple of minutes watching goal kicks all the time, it's going to drop it a little bit below. On the other hand, if it's, you know, wet and sloppy and it's just a grind, forwards battles, the wingers aren't going to get touched the ball because they're going to get pushed over the sideline, all that type of stuff. Yeah, it does, you know, context is important. But look, across the first two rounds, our current base stat, base and base attack leader is Jermaine Hopgood, scoring a massive 144 points across 2 weeks. That's 72 points per week in terms of just base and base attack points. And he's averaging 82.5 at the moment. Like, that's just, you know, over pretty much 90% of his score is just his work rate. So absolutely insane. Obviously, there is some question marks now with the Eels bench, right? They've got four forwards on. So does that kind of push his minutes down? I mean, he's averaged 62 minutes so far. So it's not like I think he's going to keep hitting around the 60-minute mark. Like, he could very well still keep up a 65, 70 base and base attack average. So, you know, he's not super highly owned as well. So a lot of appeal there. A surprising name. I bet you probably wouldn't guess who the second highest name on the list would be. I'll give you a hint. It is a forward.
Hosking.
Look, it's not a bad shout, but it's actually Isaiah Yeo of all players. And yeah, I mean, it's a throwback to when he was an absolute gun in 2020. He scored 161, so averaging 80.5 across two games so far. 137 of those in base and base attack. So I know not everyone can be like Isaiah Yeo and kick a pinpoint bomb for a try assist like he can, but yeah, he's just getting through his work, playing massive minutes. I can't see that's not continuing, right? With Fisher Harris out as well. And you know, the Panthers naming Dame Laurie on the bench as their 14. Like, I think Yo's locked into massive minutes still, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's so interesting to watch, right? Like, I watch Cam Murray quite closely because I love Cam. I love watching him play. And he looks absolutely shagged after 20 minutes, but manages to last out the 80. Whereas Isaiah Yo looks like he doesn't break a sweat and he gets through the same amount, if not, well, clearly more work at present. He is a marvel. I feel like he's been around for a while as well, right? He can't be a spring chicken.
He's been around for ages. And I kind of think when he first came onto the scene, he was playing center, right? That's why we loved it. He was a center wing dual position player. And it's just progressed slowly as he's gotten older to more and more in the middle, you know, going from center to the edge. And now he's purely, I mean, still arguably the best lock in the game or thereabouts anyway. But yeah, absolute beast. And I definitely think he's Supercoach relevant this year. Third in the list makes me really sad, but it is Payne Haas. So that won't be him on the list very much longer. But he, you know, 134 points in base mace attack across the first two rounds. Just a beast. Fourth name here is Tyrrell May, and it explains why he's so highly, you know, traded in if he's not already in people's teams. But he's hit 132 across the 2 weeks so far. So, you know, of his 133 points, yeah, basically the guy is an absolute machine. 66 points per game in base mace attack, and hard to see it not continuing the way Robbo was rotating May in the last game. So, yeah. Sign me up. Get him in if you don't have him, and that's me this round. Payne Haas is being downgraded to Tyrrell May. So, yeah, sad times. Look, I'm going to skip ahead because, yeah, there's a lot of forwards in there. Hosking is fifth on the list, and he's hitting around 60 base attack points per game. So very impressive for an edge back role, especially considering he played center for a chunk of the last game. So, yeah, he's very, very super coach relevant. I just wonder if Ricky Stewart might not do a switcheroony and put him in as a starter. I mean, I kind of feel like keep a trade up your sleeve in case that happens, right?
Yeah, well, look, I think I just said his name at number two because I'm trying to speak it into existence. He's still one of my trades. If Ricky names him on the bench, I might have to, well, if he stays on the bench, sorry, I might have to seriously think about it. There's every chance he may stay in my team, but if he starts, please get him in, people. Please get him in.
Yeah, I'm with you right there. If he does start, I'll definitely be pivoting to Hosking for sure. The name straight after him is actually Pat Carrigan, and that's very interesting, obviously, because Paddy Carrigan, he spent a lot of the first game playing on the edge. In fact, 76 minutes playing on the edge, whereas in the second game, he was exclusively in the middle and racking up the points. So he's just under, like he's at 59 points per game in base attack, which, again, when you play a full game on the edge, very impressive. I think he's going to go off the charts with no Payne Haas for the next couple of weeks. So I would not be surprised if he's out there for 80 minutes a game, just holding down the middle as much as possible. I am concerned for him this week. He's going to get beaten up by the Panthers. But yeah, while Payne's out, I think Paddy's going to carry the load. So a bit of a pod move if you want to swing that way in the second row. You know, he's not going to have that ceiling, but gosh, he's going to have that huge, massive floor. I'm going to skip down to Isaac Tungo, the highest ranked, I guess, center wing in terms of base and base attack numbers. Massive 58 points per game so far in base and base attack. And look, I will say, you know, a lot of it's come in the last game where he was absolutely just taking advantage of the second rollers who are forced to play center, and also Morgan Harper, who chooses to play center. But yeah, he was just busting a tackle every single run because they couldn't keep up with him. He was just faster than them, stronger than them at times. Yeah, so I don't think what he's done in the two games so far is sustainable. And this throws to your point, right? You got to think of the context why he scored so well. The fact is he was beating up on second rollers, Tuilagi and then Cardi and then Harper as well for about, you know, 76 minutes of that round two game there. So yeah, I definitely don't think he's going to repeat that score or his work rate in that game anytime soon. So buyer beware is my recommendation there. The next center wing here, not center wing, the next back, I guess you could say, that isn't a forward on this list is Tommy Turbo. Massive 115 points in base and base attack so far. So, you know, that's roughly 57.5 points per game. For someone with Turbo's ceiling to be hitting a floor of 55, whatever you want to call it, he's pumping out 55 points a game in his work rate. Gosh, you know, sign me up for those 150s coming up very soon because you can just feel them about to explode. So we talked about this, right? Like the other night, I've speculated trading Ponga. Haven't even flirted at all with the idea of trading Turbo. I think this just reinforces that for me. Is Turbo in your team at the moment?
He is. Yeah, he is. I can't see a world where you trade him out, right? Like, with a floor of 55, he's passing the eye test hugely. Look, if he gets hurt, he gets hurt, but let's just hope we can ride that Turbo train.
It's almost like, would you trade Ponga to him?
Now, that's very doable, right? Like, you make some money out of that. I'm pretty sure probably almost 100K.
Yeah, not maybe like 60K, something like that, but you definitely get some change from going Ponga to Turbo. So it is a really interesting idea if you don't have, obviously, one of those two. The next center wing here is quite interesting. It's Selwyn Cobbo, who is averaging 55 points per game in base and base attack. Low key, he's actually looked very at home at left center. And I'm not trying not to, you know, let my Broncos homer glasses color that view, but the fact is, you know, his work rate's increased. Obviously, he's making more tackles. He's still getting the tackle bus there. Not so many runs, obviously, but the guy is getting involved and he's getting a lot of ball. There's constantly chat about Reece and Selwyn wanting to grow their combo throughout the season. And I think we saw a glimpse of how he's already improving in round two. Now, obviously, the Broncos are going to be a little bit weakened with massively weakened with no Payne Haas and Adam Reynolds at the moment. But look, Cobber's got to be on your radar. I think he's just looked really, really good to my eye. Not just because he's in a Broncos jersey, but like the numbers are backing it up too, like 55 points per game with his potential ceiling. Quite a sneaky pod play there. Would he interest you at all?
He doesn't, because I've never been a huge Selwyn Cobber guy. But it's interesting, Wilf. Like, I know Supercoach can sometimes cloud our judgment and we can make people think they're better NRL players because they're scoring well Supercoach-wise. But is this not the hottest field of centres we've had going around in a while, right? Centre of the year this year, throw in Manu, even like Cobbo's been electric, Taylor May, Tungo. The list goes on, right?
Yeah, and look, I'll skip ahead. RTS, well, in the conversation already, looking fantastic. He's sitting at 105. So obviously, you know, not quite at the same level, but I mean, 52.5 points per game in base-based tack. I know, again, small sample size, but the guy's, you know, work rate is right up there, just like he's always been when he's been in the NRL. So, yeah, he's showing no signs of slowing down. I do have question marks still as to whether he can maintain that the whole season because he's been out of the game for so long. And you know, his body hasn't been used to taking that level of punishment because, let's face it, you just don't get through as much work in union. Don't make as many tackles, don't get tackled as often. That's just the way the game is. So, yeah, look, but having said that, you know, if obviously 40%+ of Supercoach has him in their team and they're very happy with that. Dane Gagai and Taylor May also at that 55 points per game mark, so right up there. You know, Gagai, you think the upside is not as likely to come, but the work rate is undeniable. Taylor May is the guy we all obviously have been waiting to explode because he's just getting it done like almost like an edge forward in terms of his work rate, but with obviously center wing upside. And you saw what Tungo did. If obviously Taylor May is going to get those opportunities sooner rather than later, I think. A couple of last names. I mean, I'll jump over to Brian To'o. He is obviously on the left wing. They swapped wings after the first round, so I find that very interesting, playing outside Taylor May. But he's still getting through 50 points per game in work rate. So, yeah, just a beast. Jacob Carraz, 101 points, so 50.5 in base tack. Now, there's definitely question marks about his upside because the Bulldogs are going to bulldog, but can't argue the floor and his involvement. And the name I spoke about yesterday, Zach Lomax, 105, so 52, same as RTS, but that doesn't include his goal-kicking floor that he's going to have. Like, yes, he got no goal kicks last round, but that's pretty rare. NRL teams generally don't get shut out, so even if he gets, you know, an average of 6 to 8 points, that's potentially, he's looking at 60 points a game in base and base attack plus goal kicking, which is, you throw a couple of tries on there every now and then as a winger, he's going to be elite. So really just, again, hammers home why I'm interested in Lomax, and he's still on the trading list for me. But look, that's plenty of numbers. There's obviously plenty of names that you can keep looking at, but I really wanted to highlight the center wings because the forwards are pretty obvious, right? They just get through their work. They don't have that upside. Center wings generally do, and that's why they needed some more attention. But are you considering any of those guys I mentioned there?
Hosking's in on the list. There's a guy that is a long way from that list that I'm considering, and it makes me nervous because you rattle off all these center wings, and then I want to go for Mulitalo, who probably is scoring 20 points in base and base attack. But on that left wing for the Sharks, you can almost count one try as being an average of a game, I'd like to hope.
Yeah, well, look, we've seen it in the past where he will score a try a game for like 6 weeks in a row or something like that. But, you know, if you want me to give you numbers of his base and base attack, he's not bad. He's hit 44 and 51 so far in the two games, but a lot of that's come from tackle bus and offloads, which he's not known as an offloader. So, yeah, that's just something to be wary of. But look, you can't argue next 2 weeks, great negative break even, great draw. I think he's a relatively safe shout, although, like I said yesterday, he can certainly drop a stinker anytime because he's done it in the past against these next two teams that he's playing. So, all right, I think that's enough number crunching. So, again, get in touch with Carl as tax time is on the horizon. Get him to do your tax return. He'll legally maximize your tax refund. So whether it's just a basic one or you want to get into accounting for things like rental properties, capital gains, on share trading, even crypto, Carl can help you out and record everything correctly. There is no job that's too big or too small. So again, if it's a small individual tax return right through the businesses run through companies, partnerships or trusts, Carl can help you out. It doesn't matter where you are in Australia. Also, he's able to help you out using FaceTime, Zoom, any sort of video conferencing software. He can help anyone no matter where you are. And Carl wanted me to shout out that, you know, both of us are in that number crunches group that he's got, that he runs for all of his clients. So if you want to obviously face off against myself, Maddie, and also Joe, you can obviously, if you're one of Carl's clients, you can jump into that group. It's the code is obviously on offer for his clients only. And prize for the winner of that number crunches group is a free $99 tax return. So not too bad at all. So yeah, definitely get in touch with Carl. That's Carl McGrath, accountant. You'll find him on all the socials. And yeah, thanks again for Carl for sponsoring this. Let's jump into captaincy chat.
Look, man, I only need to know one thing.
Who the hell is this guy?
You and the chosen one.
You think I had a choice?
This is your captain speaking.
All right, so the matchups I thought last week were really good. And in the end, all of our super coach relevant guys flopped for the most part. I mean, Nico Hines ended up being one of the best captaincy options. He scored 75. So I think that says a lot about that round. I think, you know, in light of all the news, I mean, Nathan Cleary, first game of the round, surely he's got to be in contention for a blue armband, right?
He has. If only Nico still had that duel, the old fullback, halfback duel, it'd be delightful because I know they've got a matchup that we'll talk about later. So it makes me a little nervous to go Cleary with the blue one because I kind of want the orange one on Nico. But definitely an option, right? And I just look at their odds now. They've been crunched into $1.25. I know Nate did only score 75 or 70 last week, but he looked better than that. Although Nico scored 70 and looked worse, if that, I guess, like my eye is not that great, but that's what I would say anyway. So if you go on Nathan, first round, I know Joe is big time against the first game captain, but look, you can get your weekend off to a great start or you can not want to watch another single game of football for the weekend.
I think it's a good shout. And look, it's definitely a consideration. So if let's say you wanted to keep the orange armband available for Nico, so if you're going to vice captain someone else, I mean, are we looking at maybe Teddy or Latrell on the Friday evening game? They both seem worthy of consideration there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That game can dish up anything. It could be a bludger, an 8-10 bludger, or they could both just come out and 28-32. So definitely not a bad option. Both of them looked good so far. Latrell's, if you're ever going to have a fire in your belly with the last week that's gone, what Latrell's sort of been through and put himself through, he needs to turn up. So, look, if you're a believer, jump on.
That's very fair. The next couple of games, I don't think there are great options. Like, I don't think anyone's captaining a Bulldog or a Titan. I think from the Cowboys, though, maybe Val Holmes, a bit of a risky option. But, you know, if the Dragons turn up like they did last round, I think, yeah, Val could go absolutely bananas. Conversely, obviously, like I said, Lomax, very safe floor, and he could also jag some tries. The Cowboys are not the safest defensively, and they can dish up some, you know, pretty poor defensive efforts at times. So, again, these are super risky options. I think if we're sticking with the tried and true, I mean, Nico Hines, I imagine he might end up being the most popular captaincy pick for the round. But you can't discount someone like a Tommy Turbo on Sunday afternoon. I think the weather's looking pretty good. It's not at Brookie, it's at Combank, but sunny Sunday arvo, Tommy Turbo. That's enticing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a fast deck at Combank too. They've got beautiful turf there. Leave it to the last minute. You can be put your head-to-head opponents off by looking like you've got 700 so far, and Sunday comes around, Tommy can back out 150 as your captain, and you can break people's hearts pretty quickly.
And I think I will mention Pappenhausen in the final game of the round. I know it's not quite the storm where You know, there's no Cam Munsters, no Jerome Hughes either, but there's still Harry Grant and Ryan Papenhuyzen. I think that could be enough to knock off the Knights. It's a little bit riskier for mine because I think the Knights are at home and they generally can turn up against the Storm when they're playing at home. So I do believe there's going to be, you know, some disappointment there. But at the same time, the Storm can turn it up, and especially Papenhuyzen doesn't take much to suddenly explode points-wise like he did just this game just gone. Like, I feel like he scored about 60, 70 points in the last 2 minutes almost.
Yeah, he was active, wasn't he? And he's another one that's great to watch. Like, I wouldn't discount Ponga either. With no Hastings, he's going to probably be asked to do a bit more with the ball. Jack Cogger is sort of your up-and-down halfback who's not going to command a lot of attacking stats, I wouldn't have thought. So Ponga against a somewhat depleted Storm at home on a Sunday Ave, Newcastle need a win, so he's not the worst yet. To be fair, here I am saying that after I'm selling him, but look, if you're keeping him, there's worse options.
Yeah, I do think, because I mean, I'm going to ride with Ponga and Turbo, and I think I just can't see myself captaining Ponga over Turbo this week for sure. So I might just be stuck on Hines and just be with Hines again, but it's definitely one of those two, Hines or Turbo for me most likely. But yeah, I think that's enough chat on the captaincy. Well, let's talk some strategy.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
All right. So last week I was talking about really rounds 2, 3, 4. You know, it's really helpful to kind of plan out your trades a little bit and also prioritize where you can. You know, round 2, generally, you just want to fix up cash generation. And I think a lot of people have done that. Round 3, obviously, is to the second chance to do that and consolidate it. But not only is it about cash generation, but also it's about who you ditch from the higher expensive guys who have high break-evens that you might want to ditch. So I know we talked about Callum Ponga. I kind of think he is a potential sell, but it's not a must, not a must at all. It really comes down to team build for that one. But as for the other fullbacks, I don't think there's any that, you know, you'd be really wanting to trade out necessarily.
Nah, no one you'd be selling the farm to get rid of. Drinkwater maybe, but they've got the Dragons. You'd be a brave man to sell Drinkwater before the Dragons game actually. So I'd take that back as quick as I said it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's really just really Ponga who seems to be the one who has the most question marks over him at fullback. So he's the guy that's obviously, you know, really highly traded out right now. In fact, again, almost 15,000 super coaches have traded him out right this moment. So, yeah, I can understand that. Now, I've been pretty clear. I'd not even really thought about trading out Nico Hines, you know, in spite of him having a sizable break even, right? I think it's sitting at like 151, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just going to double check that so I don't lead people astray. Oh, no, it's 175. It's clear he's got the 151. But, yeah, obviously 175 is big, but I kind of feel like he could hit that this week against the Tigers.
Yeah, he could hit more than that against the Tigers. An interesting thought. Now, I know one way to make money is sell Nico, watch him drop, and then bring him back in. It's the same way as buying someone who's going to go up. Although, look, I think there is a world where you really don't need to sell Nico for the whole year, right? Like, after last year's performance, I don't know if he's going to get himself a sky blue jersey. So you might have him through that period of the year. He's proven 2 years in a row he's the leading super coach scorer. I don't want to say this because I've actually got him in a draft comp as well, but he's seemingly not super injury prone. So hopefully, yeah. Look, I'm going to keep Nico the whole year, I think.
It's a risk because, I mean, Tigers and then Raiders. I mean, Raiders are top of table at the moment, but last year they leaked Supercoach points like crazy. And then there's round 5 bye. So, yeah, it's not a 2-week run that I want to risk, even though he won't be around for round 5. But, yeah, for me, it's a hold for Nico. Now, Cleary obviously has a week in Broncos, then the Roosters, and then Seagulls, and has a round 6 bye. 151 break even. I tend to think, like, there was enough positive signs there from him and also the Panthers full stop. To stick with him, right?
Yeah, they're the best team in the comp, regardless of what the ladder says this early on, and he's got his hands on everything. Luai actually looks worse than he ever has, which is a good thing for Nathan. It means he's got to do more. I don't know how old he is. I think he's actually even younger than me, so he's still getting better every year. Like, yeah, I'd love to be him, to be honest.
I think most people would be pretty happy to be Nathan Cleary, but anyway, I'll rattle off a couple of high break-even guys. SJ, 134, potentially not goal-kicking. I think he's a genuine option to trade out, right?
Yeah.
Just that uncertainty.
He's got to go. To me, he's almost more than a definite trade. Although the trouble is who do you go to? Because do you go to one of the guys with the high break-evens as well? But yeah, I think if you own SJ, they'd be nervous watching.
Yeah, I think you just stump up the cash and get to Cleary or Hines, right? Even with the high break-even, because Cleary could lose less money than SJ does, even though he's got a high break-even because of SJ probably not scoring as well as Cleary this week. So, yeah, you got to kind of look at it relative to each other, right? To keep going down the list, I mean, we already talked about Drinky. I think you'll hold him. Gutho, a little bit interesting. 129 break-even. I kind of think Sunday afternoon footy, like maybe just let him be, right?
Yeah, if you've got Gutho in your team at fullback, you've obviously got a feeling about him because he didn't start the season cheap and there was a hell of a lot of options at fullback. So if you've lasted two rounds, I'd roll the dice a few more times.
And then Mitch Moses, 129 break-even. Obviously, yeah, not the start most super coaches were hoping for because of injury. And yeah, it's just not been great. Like, I mean, he doesn't look too bad actually when he's playing. Like, he actually looks pretty decent. He's just not kicking for goals. And he's still doing plenty of general play kicking as well. So it's an interesting one, but I tend to think he's a trade out as well.
Yeah, same ballpark.
You are nodding.
Yeah, I am nodding. Sorry, I realize that nodding doesn't come through a microphone. Same ballpark as SJ, right? I'm surprised he actually lasted out that game. He hobbled around with a sore groin and, yeah, look, get rid of him.
All right. Now, I'm just going to fly through some of the highly traded out players at the moment just to, I guess, let's do a buy-sell-hold type approach. Helam Lukey, almost 19,000, actually more than 19,000 trade outs. I mean, that makes sense, right? He's gone for quite a while. Kalen Pong, we already talked about. Payne Haas, I'm trading him out. I think he's definitely got to go as well. Ezra Mam, he's been very disappointing. Again, I was in the preseason. I'm like, why is his ownership so high? Yeah, I think he's showcased exactly why he shouldn't have been that highly owned in the first place. So yeah, happy to get rid of him, especially with the Broncos going to be depleted over the next few weeks. Now, Danny Levi is an interesting one. I can understand it, obviously, right? Lots of people jumping from Levi to Lussick. I can get around it, I suppose. It is a bit of a luxury trade.
Yeah, it seems luxury. It's tough, right? Because people are not wanting to trade out their hooker one for Lussick. But if he's playing 80 minutes, to be honest, I don't think he can go less than 45. So if you've got Levi, I'm trading out Brandon Smith at hooker one for Joey Lussick and going to run with him. Levi's break-even still minus 15. He's still going to make some cash. You'd be devastated if Lussick puts in a stinker and you've gone Levi to Lussick, wouldn't you?
I think the only problem is let's say Levi has, you know, no attack stats for the next 2 weeks. He will cap out at about 279K, and that means he's made like 40 grand, and then his break even will be above, it'll be at 32. So there's a chance that in 2 weeks he's already made all the cash he's going to make. Now, I guess if we let's jump over to Lussick and see what happens if, let's say, he does give you 40s for the next 2 weeks. He's got that negative 50 break even. If he gives you 40s, he's going to cap out at 429, 430K. So, you know, that's a decent chunk of change more. I mean, it would pretty much be 130,000 based on his starting price, roughly. And then his break even will be in the mid-40s. So I kind of see that it could be worth the trade if Levi just doesn't get any attacking stats for the next 2 weeks and continues to play 50-odd minutes. And, you know, we've seen both weeks so far, his base is around 20 and 25. So I don't hate it. It feels super luxury, but there's a potential that you're going to make a lot more cash from going with Lussick, and that's with Lussick not getting any attacking stats, right? And he could easily, like that, I've just plugged in, you know, 240s. So if he, let's say, hits 250s, which is very doable considering he's, you know, scored 61 and 82 so far, 250s, he's going to probably make about he'll get to about 460K. So that's over 150K over the next couple of weeks. So definitely there's a fair bit more cash on offer and it could be worth the trade. So, yeah, I guess it comes down to luxuries. Next highest trade out was Siwa Wong, you know, over 5,000-6,000 trade outs. I mean, it makes sense. Farmer Silly, only people ditching him. Mitch Moses, Brendan Hands, Brandon Smith. Happy to see all of those guys go. I don't think there's anything too dramatic there. Jumping over the highest traded in players, Joey Lussick, almost 30,000 trade-ins. Makes sense. Jarrell May, another 18,000 trade-ins. Again, makes sense. Zach Hosking, third most traded in player at 15,000. That's very interesting still. Obviously, a lot of people thinking like you are, just getting on him anyway.
Yeah, I think out of those sort of 15,667, one is definitely not Ricky Stewart after the way he's named the team. And look, I think a lot of us are hopeful more than anything. And to be fair, with the negative 56, worst case scenario, he's a two-week play and you take your 100K and you tell your story walking, I guess.
Yeah, it's not too bad, obviously, because the problem is like he's 511K. So if he's in your team, you're playing him, which is probably the main issue that I've got if he's on the bench. Next most popular name is Luke Brooks. These are the people trading up at halfback, right? Or maybe Ezra Mam traders getting rid of him to Brooks or whatever. But almost 15,000 people. I get it. He's passing the eye test, but he's not getting it done for Supercoach because his game's just not quite suited the way it is like a lot of other halves right now. So next most popular, Ronnie Mulitalo. You know, I could certainly get around it. It's a lot of a lot of people trading him in, though. It's quite impressive that people are shelling out 630K for Ronnie, but he's a pretty safe option for the next 2 weeks. And then he's got the round five bye. So I get it. You're obviously looking at it, so you can get around that too, I can imagine.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to go over something here, but can I go back about something that is gross? So there is 28.9% of people now own Luke Brooks and only 34% own Terrell May. Come on now.
Jeez.
Come on now.
I think that'll catch up pretty soon, honestly. If those numbers don't include this week's trade-ins, I imagine. But yeah, that is wild. Ryan Pappenhausen, I can understand a lot of excitement about him, you know, 126 or whatever he ended up on at, you know, sub 650K, I'd get around it. But you kind of think, well, eventually you're not going to have him next week. So that's the big question mark there. And, you know, will the Storm be as good without Hughes and Munster, etc.? There's question marks around it for sure. But I'll never begrudge anyone trading in Pappenhausen, that's for sure. And then Josh Curran, Xavier Savage, Luke Metcalf, and Chad Townsend is the wildest one. He's the 10th most traded in player, almost 5,000 super coaches bringing him in. Again, these people are clearly just trying to find value at halfback, trading out someone there. And he's got a negative six break even, but this is Chad Townsend. He scored 51 and 64 so far. But yeah, just don't do it, right? Just don't do it to yourselves.
No, like Chad's been around for quite some time now. It's not like it's a one-game sample size. It's a 10-year sample size, and the Chad is not the super coach guy.
There's a reason when you look down his past history, his average versus opponent, pretty much every single average there is 30s and 40s. I think his highest average against opponent is against the Warriors, 54.3. Yeah, he's just not super coach relevant. Don't do it to yourself, guys. All right, I think that's enough talking about the trade-ins and things like that. In terms of other advice for this particular round, I mean, do you see that there's any like potential plays? Like what if I'm struggling, let's say, to replace someone at second row? You know, is the safe play to go with someone like a Josh Curran or a Sean Lane or someone who's going to most likely keep appreciating price? Or do you think this is a time where you can forego some cash and trust pay up and get like a gun? You know, get an Isaiah Yeo or Patrick Carrigan or someone like that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, right? You can't buy points. You can only score them. So if you're making three trades, and I still think you do need squad value, right? Like we proved last year, around 26 and 27 were real movers and shakers in the overall ranking. So you need that high squad value and trades left to make that work. But if you're making one trade just for a safe play in your 17, Isaiah Yeo could well be that guy. But I still would like to think you need at least two trades purely cash generation related.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I guess to that effect, I've got obviously one of my trades, Cheese, Brandon Smith down to Joey Lussick, freeing up some cash there. So that's handy. And right now I'm looking at, because of the Payne Haas injury, I've had to trade him to Terrell May. I mean, Terrell May could have come into my team regardless, but just makes it a simpler decision there. So I think someone like a Terrell May is also cash plus points, but there's a genuine chance he stays in your team all year because he's, you know, front row forward two or three for your team build very easily and covers some buys, etc. So get around that. And then my other dilemma is whether I trade out Greg Marju to a Val Holmes or a Lomax or, you know, someone who's at center wing gun. not so much points, very much points there, not so much cash. Whereas I can look at, you know, someone like a Luki to Curran, which is definitely going to help my second row, which is a little bit skinny at the moment, but it does leave me with a bucket load of cash in the bank, like literally 560,000 in the bank, which, yeah, I don't want to have that much sitting around. What do you reckon I should do?
Well, you make me nervous now because I've got 512,000 sitting around, ready for next week. Well, I'm going to pounce next week. But look, it all, to me, if you've got four relevant centre wings that you're happy to roll out, maybe the second row is not the bad option because Curran could go points and value. But if you're trying to scrunch up for a fourth centre wing, like I know mine aren't that strong, lock down a position there with Valentine Holmes and you're laughing. It's amazing how well he actually scored last week considering when he tied up his shoelaces. I feel like he did not want to be there one little bit. So
yeah, he played one of his worst games I've seen for a long time from Val and still scored 50 plus. So I think it just speaks to how good he is for Supercoach. But look, I think what you brought up there, you know, loading up and just spending up next week is definitely viable. And that's why I'm saying planning ahead for your trades can really be handy. I guess for me, I'm looking at this where I'm pretty much resigning myself to the fact I'm boosting next week as well. And I'll be making three trades and one of them probably is downgrading someone to a Fatape or whatever. So that'll be cash. And then, yeah, just buying. I think, you know, I'm going to bring in a second row gun, a center wing gun, and just hopefully start scoring some more points off the ladder.
Yeah, I got my eyes on iPad this week. I think there's every chance he's in my team next week. He looked good last week.
Definitely. And that's a good thing about, you know, having 3 weeks to watch before his price changes. And yeah, it's only round two this week. So definitely get a good look at him there. All right, mate. I think that's plenty of chat for this round. You've kind of talked through your trades, right? You know, you've got Lusick coming in for Harry Grant. You've got...
For Brandon Smith. Brandon Smith's gone.
Oh, for Brandon Smith, sorry. Yep. And Joe's the one who's trading Harry Grant to him. That's right. And then you've got...
Going Lukey to Hosking. So, look, Lukey's got to go. I need someone to play there. And Ponga, this is the one that's... Well, I suppose the Hosking one's up in the air too. I don't have another option there, which I need to come up with quickly in case he goes poorly. Maybe Curran and Ponga to Mulitalo. I think I'm set there. I'm just going to grit my teeth for 2 weeks. Hopefully Mulitalo can score some points, get some cash, and I'll have a better idea. Paps will be off a bye. Yeah, I can play some games there. So that's where I'm set at right now. You got a better option for me if Hosking comes off the bench?
Yeah, look, I think Curran's the standout. I do think at second row, I'm almost thinking, do you just pay up? Like, you've got bank, right? So do you pay up for someone who, you know, an Olakuatu, or do you pay up for Tino and end up moving in the front row forward the week after or something like that? There's a few options that you could get frisky with if obviously Hosking doesn't work out there. But yeah, I think that's the beauty of maybe going for a bit of a pod pick, because obviously Hosking is very, very, very vanilla, and understandably so. If he is going to be there, I'd be right there with you basically for Lukey trading in Hosking as well. Anyway, that's us for this week. Thanks again for listening. We will catch you again next week. So good luck with all your decisions, and yeah, catch you again soon.